shoot from downtown for three. It's 56-45 at the half. Technical, number 23, 3-second violation, number 11. Traveling, number 4.
You're listening to Hamster Wheel Sports, the podcast where we refuse to discuss any sissy topics that don't fall directly under the category of sports. My name is Matt Seeley, and I'm here with my beloved co-host, Judge James Ryan.
In the house. Happy to be here, Matt.
Welcome, James. The people out there listening to SaveOnRadio.com get their sports fix. They may not know who you are. So why don't you just take a moment here at the top of the hour to tell the people just who in the hell you are.
Well, you know, just like, say, Marco Bellinelli, you know, I was out for the regular season, but, you know, you needed some role players to come in, take some shots, pick up some points off the bench, and here I am. But unlike the 76ers, I'm here to win.
Nice one. So, no book bratch this week, folks. James, I suspect that book bratch might be licking his wounds this week. And I have full respect for that. Because if what happened to the Toronto Raptors just this past week, since last Sunday when we did the first Hamster Wheel Sports Playoffs edition, happened to my team, I wouldn't exactly want to go inside the booth and talk about it live on air either.
That is very fair. And, I mean, all we've seen this week is that LeBron James has no mercy, no conscience, no morals, and no regard for any Raptors at all.
It's easy to pile on the Toronto Raptors. The truth is they are a great squad. And they had a stellar regular season, and they have a really good core and a really good coach and a really good system and a really good culture and a great basketball city. And for the past several years, they've been rising through the ranks and reaching plateaus that Raptors fans have never known. But they keep coming up against the behemoth known as LeBron James in the postseason. And the problem with LeBron James is they don't have a matchup for him, and very few teams do, or at least have the roster to keep throwing bodies at him. And you're not gonna slow him down that much. But I mean, LeBron James does something against the Toronto Raptors that he doesn't do to other teams, it seems.
Yeah,
it's just such a aloof, casual dominance.
That's such a great way of putting it, and that's exactly how I felt watching that that highlight of his game winner from last night.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I must have watched that play 20 times, and it's ridiculous. It's amazing. It's incredible, and it's also, like you said, it's casual. He brings the ball up the court, and, you know, what are you worried about? You're worried, you know, what, he's going to spot up for a three, maybe? You know, he's won a few game winners on that. He's going to drive to the hole. No, he's going to casually dribble it up and take a bank shot almost at the baseline and just at the buzzer. Not a chance.
He had a lane to the hoop.
Yep.
We know that he can bully his way to the rim and just drop it in. No, he took a running floater to win the game.
Yep.
Because he can. And watching the way he, look, if the Raptors were going to win a game in this series, it would have been game one, and game three. They were close, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, you know, in game two, but game two was all LeBron, all Cavaliers. So in game two, LeBron James, he was doing this 17-foot game, this mid-range game where he was fading away, step backs, and it was butter. And it looked the most similar, tell me if you agree, James, to Michael Jordan that he ever has.
Sure. And I think, you know, it's kind of a, you know, people put up stats for anything these days, but I think the stat that he broke was the most fadeaway, step back, two-pointers in a playoff half, which sounds stupid and ridiculous, but if you watch the tape and you watch the shots he was taking, like it's Dirk on speed. It's insane.
Man. So it's fun to watch though, dude. I mean, it's really fun to watch galvanize LeBron James, who, I mean, this is what makes every single tumultuous LeBron season worth it. It's when you go, oh, wait, he can do this? It's almost hard to describe what he's able to do. You know, I just got out of Avengers Infinity War, James, just today.
Yep.
And, well, that movie's all about Thanos, the space lord, getting all the Infinity Stones, and he has every imaginable power, and he's indestructible, and nothing can stop him. LeBron James right now has all the Infinity Stones on the basketball court.
Yeah, but they're not his teammates. It's just him.
Yeah, he has. This is the worst next gen Cavs team that there's been. And honestly, I was thinking, like last series, I was thinking LeBron James. What he should do, because I am a smart basketball mind.
Of course.
I said, LeBron James, what he needs to do is put in a half effort against the Pacers, intentionally lose.
Yep.
And this was when Pacers won game one, right?
Yep.
So, like, so I had it all figured out. LeBron has to intentionally lose and then just, like, why don't you take May and June off, LeBron? And rest your body because you've been to 7 straight finals, and then you can go wherever you like. You can go ball in Houston or Philadelphia or sure. Toronto.
Sure.
And then you can be rested and fresh, and you can go at it again and try to catch Jordan. No, he decided to hit a game winner in game 5 against Indy. And then in game 7, just have a virtuoso performance. And now he's up 3-0 on the Toronto Raptors and clearly engaged. And there's just something different. So I think we're all trying to figure out where that line is that the season changed for the Cavaliers. What are your thoughts?
Well, and, you know, that's just what makes it so hard for the Raptors, because this was their year, you know. This was the year where LeBron James looked vulnerable. And that's what everyone was saying. And, you know, the Pacers took them to 7, and they looked challenged in the first round for the first time in forever. It was the first Game 7 that LeBron had played in the first round in his career. And, you know, everyone was saying, okay, this is the best Raptors team ever. This is maybe LeBron's worst supporting cast ever. This is the year where they have a shot. And sure, it sucks that they're seeing LeBron in the second round. Sure, that's, you know, unfortunate. But this was the year where they could really take it to LeBron. And other than him, who do you have to beat in the East? But they're the Raptors. So here we are.
But they are different, the Raptors. Like, this series could be 2-1.
Yeah.
It's just about how fluky and fickle the basketball gods are, man. Like, if LeBron, well, first of all, if Tristan Thompson doesn't come out of nowhere again and get revived and make that block in game 7 of the Pacers series, then what happens? And if that goaltending is called, then what happens? The situation is different. It's a parallel universe. We'll never know. And the Pacers storm their way to a title. And the Cavs are out in the first round. And then everything we're saying was right. Like, oh, LeBron is just too high maintenance. And you know, like, he's not worth it. He's it's not worth the black cloud that'll hang over your franchise. But instead, you know, a bounce here and there. And here we are. And to that point, the Raptors could be up 2-1 in this series. So it's just so weird. What if he misses that game winner that yesterday?
Well, for sure. I mean, what if the Raptors win game 1, which they
had opportunity.
Which they arguably should have.
After opportunity. I mean, Jonas Valanciunas told the story, man, when he literally, like a pro wrestler, like, was hamming it up, like, collapsing to his knees and smacking the hardwood, being like, we can't beat this team.
Yeah.
I mean, it says it all. They had that Fred VanVleet shot. They had, like, layup opportunity after layup opportunity, and they just couldn't get it. There was a lid on the rim. It's almost like how is the fear of God not in the Toronto Raptors? Like, we are cursed. We are doomed to an eternity of losing to the Cavaliers.
It sure feels that way.
And that's why LeBron has the freedom to just, you know, hey, see what happens if I put up the stupid shot.
And you can say whatever you want about my regular season. You can say I don't have the guys. You can say I don't have the legs. You can say whatever you want, because as soon as the playoffs come, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to probably lose in five games in the finals, but that's another story. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that, man. But I mean, this is the best LeBron James we've ever seen right now, dude.
Which is an insane thing to say.
Which, when you're talking about postseason basketball, is never not a true statement.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? Like, every year he gets better in the postseason. In the regular season, he's going to, I think, try to aim for about 45, 50 wins.
Yep.
But in the postseason, he's always getting better. Right now, he's Jordan, man. He's full Jordan.
Yeah, I don't know how you really argue with that. And, you know, like you said, the Raptors could be up 2-1. They could even, I think, even if they were down 1-2, even if they just won one of those games, we'd still be having a different conversation. I would say they have a shot at the series. I'd say they have a shot at the next game, but three games.
It's all the way that it just, that the ball bounced. It's just like a stupid made floating runner that changed, that affects the course of basketball history forever and shapes franchises and just levels the landscape of the basketball world, dude. It is insane. Like, what if this was a series where the Raptors beat the Cavs finally, and it very well could be. I mean, the Raptors are different this year, James. They're not folding, dude.
No.
They came back in game three, and the Cavs got up like a stupid amount on them, and then they came back, and in the end, it was Kyle Lowry, three after three after three after right play. I mean, like, late in the game, it was OG's play late, right? He makes a three. He drives on LeBron. LeBron falls to the ground. OG misses a layup but controls it and puts it back in, and then he hits another three.
Yeah.
So OG's playing out of his mind, and he's a rookie. And then, like, Kyle Lowry's bringing him back. I know DeMar DeRozan sat in that fourth quarter, but, like, Kyle and OG are doing it, and we're seeing this Raptors squad that's never been better and are primed to defeat LeBron, but they just don't. They just don't, and I wasn't expecting it, man. I picked the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough. You know, and the Raptors were favored in the series, too. You know, like, it's pretty damn hard to bet against LeBron James, but here we are again. And you really think that the Raptors, you know, as good as they look this year, they could have beat just about any team in the East. And, you know, the one team they couldn't beat, the one guy they couldn't beat, is LeBron.
Get this, dude, though. I mean, I think if I'm a Raptors fan, if I'm Book Brat, she's the biggest Raptors fan in the region.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out, Book. We miss you here on HW Sports. I'm happy. I'm optimistic.
Are you happy?
I'm not doing backflips. I wanted my team to beat the Cavs. I wanted my team to beat the Cavs in six games and exercise their Cleveland demons, which
yes,
everybody thought they were going to do. But I'm happy, James, because listen, the three youngest teams in the NBA playoffs: Boston, Toronto, and Utah. Toronto's a young team, and I think they're one piece away from being a championship contender. And I'm not talking about beating LeBron, because, you know what? LeBron is 33 years old, 34 years old. I forget which, but, you know, ancient in NBA terms. And he's just not going to... He's not going to be dominant forever. There will be... This year, he was close to being overpowered. He's getting... In a way, he's getting weaker, man.
You say that, and just moments ago, you said LeBron has never been better.
I know, but he has to be getting weaker, is what I mean.
Yeah, logic dictates that. Yeah.
One year he will lose, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and if you're the Toronto Raptors, look, do you want to? If you blow up the Raptors now, you'll never beat LeBron for sure. But if you keep this together and keep tweaking the roster and this series right now is collecting more data, okay?
Yeah.
And putting yourself in a position as a franchise, stay the course. Book always says this about his Raptors. He says, "What's wrong with being a damn 50-win team and being a good, solid team that fills your arena and gives your fans something to cheer about and goes late in the playoffs?" I mean, this Raptors squad is so good. I mean, I understand the anxiety of the Raptors fans, which, by the way, certainly doesn't help, man. In the Air Canada Center, is that a home court advantage when your fans are like wringing their hands about whether or not LeBron's going to break their hearts again and again, or Paul Pierce or whoever it is? Like,
giving it to the wrong guys. I think the ACC is
the frustration on DeMar DeRozan's face in Game 3 was palpable, or Game 2 or Game 3, I forget which one. But, like, what I'm saying is they're a young squad, and clearly something's working, because this franchise has been around for 20 years, and they sucked for about 16 of those years. And, like, they got something good going here, and they could develop it. They could tweak it. They could build it into something stronger. I just don't... Which leads me to my question before we move on to the next series, Judge James.
Yep.
Is what do you think? Do they blow it up, or are they one piece away?
You know, I'm going to throw a curveball at you. I think that, just like in the past, LeBron James is going to dictate this. So if you remember when LeBron was a free agent last, which was probably last year, but when LeBron was a free agent in Cleveland last, before he went to Miami, every other big name free agent was waiting on him, right? You know, we were waiting to see where Chris Bosh was going to go. We were waiting to see where everyone was going to go. And they were all waiting for LeBron. They were all waiting to see where he was going to go, because what that meant was, where else was there going to be money? Where else was there going to be opportunities? Where else were people going to be looking for players? And they couldn't decide, they couldn't make that choice until LeBron did. Because LeBron is, you know, the meter of the league. He decides where the league is going to go. And everyone waited until he signed. So here's what I'm saying. This year, it's the same thing but different. The Raptors are going to have to wait and see where LeBron James goes. Not a player, but a whole team. Because if LeBron James goes west, keep the team. Keep the squad together. Who's going to beat you? Okay, I mean, sure, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving. That's going to be a really good team, but we haven't seen them play together yet, right? Sure, Philly's looking good, but then again, now all of a sudden they're down 3-0 against the Celtics. So I think, you know, with all this talk about LeBron going to LA or going to Houston or this or that, maybe he does it. And if he does it, I say you bring the band back. But if you can wait, and this might not make any sense, but I think it might. If LeBron comes back to Cleveland or Philly or a team in the East, then maybe you got to blow it up. And maybe it's not a blow it up. Maybe it's just a piece. But, you know, we've seen the Raptors add pieces. We've seen them get younger. We've seen them draft good rookies. We've seen them get good role players like CJ Miles. We've seen them do all kinds of different stuff. And they've gotten there, but if the goal is still to beat LeBron James, then we gotta, you know, take another look at it, right?
Well, it's hard to track those free agents, but I think, like, is it absurd to suggest that LeBron could come to Toronto? Everybody loves Toronto, dude.
LeBron already owns Toronto. He doesn't want to play there.
But LeBron has said famously that he loves and respects the Toronto fan base. And, you know, he must love the Air Canada Center, dude. And he'd look good in that Raptor red, dude. Book would lose his mind, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know what to say if that happened. But
are you counting that out?
It's not happening.
It's I don't think anything so. Anything is possible. Nothing is. Every off season that goes by, like, these, they have these crazy, like, roster shakeups and these elite players line on and teams you never would have expected them to, and you're like, that's crazy, but you get used to it, and very suddenly it's, you know, It's not unusual anymore. We'll see, man. We'll see if LeBron goes to Toronto. So, dude, before we go on to the next series, I just want to get your thoughts on... I forgot to intro at the top of the podcast. What's your favorite basketball team?
Well, it is the New York Knickerbockers. None other.
Well, there's some optimistic news here in the sports headlines here.
Which is never good, but continue.
Apparently, I'm always so optimistic about the Knicks. I remember at the beginning of this season, I was like, they're going to be
dangerous game, my friend.
They're going to be in the playoffs. It's a dangerous game. Check it out. But you know what? They're on an upward trajectory, I say, because they got Phil Jackson out of there.
Yep.
They have an exciting young roster that was good early on in the season. And they just hired their new GM, Scott Perry, just hired a new head coach named David Fizdale.
Yes.
Who obviously rose to the ranks in Miami. Yep. He was an assistant coach on those championship teams.
Very true.
And every player just loves and respects the guy. He did great in Memphis until that backwards ownership group fired him because I guess they wanted to lose every game they could.
Yep.
There was distrust brewed between Marc Gasol and David Fizdale. So that was a little shady how he got fired. Anyways, he didn't deserve to be fired because he was a great coach.
Yep.
You got to be excited about this move, right?
Yeah. Any Knicks move, even if I am excited about it, I'm excited with a bit of trepidation. But at the same time, this is good. It's good. It's not Mark Jackson, for one. It could be a lot worse. And David Fizdale is, it's good where in the past the Knicks have made choices that let's just say we're less for player or team development and more for, what the fans would like. The Knicks have always been very aware of what the fans want, what the media wants, what this or that. And, that makes sense. That comes from playing in one of, if not the biggest media markets in the world. But at the same time, that has been their folly, and those moves have repeatedly failed. So David Fizdale is a good hire. I can't say anything bad about David Fizdale. He's had a great career. I like his attitude. I like him as a coach. It'll be interesting to see what his relationship is like with Kristaps. That is sort of one of the most important things, I think, going forward. And if they work well together, then that's a very, very good sign. I think that'll kind of be a point to judge this hire on.
Look, this team once hired Derek Fisher.
Yes.
The year after he retired.
Months after he...
and I think he was fired that same season.
We all know how that turned out, yes.
So, look, all I'm saying is this coaching hire is different, okay? I liked Jeff Hornacek, right?
Yep. Yep.
I really like what he did with that Suns franchise. But anyways, he's gone. He's history. I was optimistic about that too, which means that maybe I should stop being fooled by the Knicks. But there can't be such a thing as a basketball curse, dude. This is just reality. I mean, the Knicks have to turn the corner eventually. They have a great player, a transcendent player in Kristaps Porzingis. It's unfortunately going to be a redshirt year, I think, for him. Because of his injury.
That's what I'm saying. There's, people want to say that this is like a fresh slate for the Knicks, but like you said, Kristaps is probably going to be out till December, maybe.
Patience is everything in NBA, man.
That's true.
But
we still have Joakim Noah on contract for a gazillion dollars for another couple years.
Overall,
our draft pick is not as good as it should be. There's some mitigating circumstances to my disappointment with the Knicks, but
so one thing that's been constant with David Fizdale is his accolades in player development. Players love him.
Yeah.
He connects with his players. They work hard for him.
Yep.
If David Fizdale's out on that coach, and look, they don't have a madman running this show anymore.
Yeah.
I believe in Scott Perry.
The
Scott
Zen
Perry,
master. Yeah.
Scott Perry has made good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so David Fizdale, right? Here's his squad. I mean, like, let's say, you know, in a couple seasons, whatever. He has Kristaps, Frank Ntilikina, Trey Burke, Enes Kanter, Emmanuel Mudiay, Tim Hardaway Jr. I just love that young core. And especially when, like, I think they'll overperform. I'm calling it, man. Next year, Knicks are making the playoffs, dude.
Oh, dear. I wish you wouldn't have said that. Here's...
Eventually, I'll be right.
Here's the last thing I'll say about David Fizdale and the Knicks. And what you just said about the roster is true. Those guys all have potential. And that's... I think that's the biggest word... The biggest positive word you could use with the Knicks. All those players have potential. Mudiay, you know, was kind of given up on by the Nuggets, but he has potential. Tim Hardaway Jr., he has potential. You know, Trey Burke, Frank Ntilikina, like all of these guys, they have potential. We haven't necessarily seen, you know, the peak of their success. And there's nothing we've seen from David Fizdale that tells us that he wouldn't be able to pull that out of them. So with that being said, I think there's hope. I think there is a chance for development. I still think their best bet next year would be to win 18 games and get a good draft pick, but, you know, let's see what happens.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, you know what? That's the basketball future. That's the unknown. That's like a team like that. We're talking about their future. But let's talk about the right now, the here and now of NBA basketball. That's a conference semifinals in the NBA playoffs. We're going to be talking about that right after this song. We'll be back. We're going to talk about the other three series. We got some good ones. One good one, Philly and Boston. That's good. The other two are just, they're pretty much done with. But we're going to be talking about those when we get back. And you're listening to Hamster Wheel Sports live on SavonRadio.com.
Have always been very aware of what the fans want, what the media wants, what this or that. And, you know, that makes sense. That comes from playing in one of, if not the biggest media markets in the world. But at the same time, that has been their folly, and those moves have repeatedly failed. So David Fizdale is a good hire. I can't say anything bad about David Fizdale. He's had a great career. I like his attitude. I like him as a coach. It'll be interesting to see what his relationship is like with Kristaps. That is sort of one of the most important things, I think, going forward. And, you know, if they work well together, then that's a very, very good sign. I think that'll kind of be a point to judge this hire on.
Look, this team once hired Derek Fisher.
Yes.
The year after he retired.
Months. Next year. Months after he...
And I think he was fired that same season.
We all know how that turned out, yes.
So, look, all I'm saying is this coaching hire is different, okay? I liked Jeff Hornacek, right?
Yep.
I really like what he did with that Suns franchise. But anyways, he's gone. He's history. I was optimistic about that, too, which means that maybe I should stop being fooled by the Knicks. But there can't be such a thing as a basketball curse, dude. This is just reality. I mean, the Knicks have to turn the corner eventually. They have a great player, a transcendent player in Kristaps Porzingis. It's unfortunately going to be a redshirt year, I think, for him because of his injury.
That's what I'm saying. There's, you know, people want to say that this is like a fresh slate for the Knicks, but like you said, Kristaps is probably going to be out till December, maybe.
Patience is everything in NBA, man.
That's true.
But
we still have Joakim Noah on contract for a gazillion dollars for another couple years.
Overall,
our draft pick is not as good as it should. There's some mitigating circumstances to my disappointment with the Knicks, but.
So one thing that's been constant with David Fizdale is his accolades in player development. Players love him.
Yeah.
He connects with his players. They work hard for him.
Yep.
If David Fizdale is out on that coach, and look, they don't have a madman running the show anymore.
Yeah.
I believe in Scott Perry.
The
Scott
Zen
Perry,
master, yeah.
Scott Perry has made good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So David Fizdale, right? Here's his squad. I mean, like, let's say, you know, in a couple seasons, whatever. He has Kristaps, Frank Ntilikina, Trey Burke, Enes Kanter, Emmanuel Mudiay, Tim Hardaway Jr. I just love that young core. And especially when, like, I think they'll overperform. I'm calling it, man. Next year, Knicks are making the playoffs, dude.
Oh, dear. I wish you wouldn't have said that. Here's
eventually, I'll be right.
True. Here's the last thing I'll say about David Fizdell and the Knicks. And what you just said about the roster is true. Those guys all have potential. And I think that's the biggest positive word you could use with the Knicks. All those players have potential. Mudiay, you know, was kind of given up on by the Nuggets, but he has potential. Tim Hardaway Jr., he has potential. You know, Trey Burke, Frank Nikitina, like all of these guys, they have potential. We haven't necessarily seen, you know, the peak of their success. And there's nothing we've seen from David Fizdale that tells us that he wouldn't be able to pull that out of them. So with that being said, I think there's hope. I think there is a chance for development. I still think their best bet next year would be to win 18 games and get a good draft pick. But, you know, let's see what happens.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, you know what? That's the basketball future. That's the unknown. That's like a team like that. We're talking about their future. But let's talk about the right now, the here and now of NBA basketball. That's a conference semifinals in the NBA playoffs. We're going to be talking about that right after this song. We'll be back. We're going to talk about the other three series. We got some good ones. Well, one good one, Philly and Boston. That's good. The other two are just, they're pretty much done with. But we're going to be talking about those when we get back. And you're listening to Hamster Wheel Sports live on SavonRadio.com.
Yeah.
We're back on Hamster Wheel Sports on SavonRadio.com.
All right, Matt. So just a little question for you. Before we took that break, you said that the closest series or the series that was the most interesting to you was the Sixers and the Celtics. Now, my only thought about that is that's the only series that we haven't talked about yet where one team is up 3-0. So if that's the case, and I know you're the resident Celtics fan, tell me why you're so confident that Philly could make this a series.
Well, man, because I just think it's if it were ever possible, it would be in this series.
Yep.
Because, well, it's almost an anomaly that Boston won on in someone else's barn. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we have big Al Horford to thank for that, dude. I mean, he can drive past Joel Embiid whenever he wants to. I mean, who knew that when Al Horford was on the Hawks, he was such a great player. I didn't care about him when he was on the Hawks. I was like, why do they keep calling this guy an all-star? But, yeah, now he's on the Celtics, and he's just big game Al. But, yeah, so, I mean, he's been such a great floor general for them, such a great leader. He has the ball a lot. Terry Rozier, he's like putting up so many shots just because he's the next man up for Kyrie, and he's really been performing well. And they do have an admirable next man up quality, and they have a lot of people are calling Brad Stevens the best coach in the NBA now. But I say all that to say they are depleted.
Yep.
And the 76ers still have amazing talent on the floor, and we just can't forget about that, James. The next game's in Philly. Okay, I'm pretty much giving game four to Philly right now, right? Because whether or not the series is short or long, I know they're going to win game four.
Yeah, I mean, I think the argument is that, you know, kind of like the Raptors, the Sixers could have won at least two of these games, probably all three, you know, at some point. You know, and with that being said, you know, the Celtics have looked great, but I think the assumption is that this magic, this Celtics magic has to end at some point, right? That's the idea, right?
When the playoffs started, I said this is a redshirt year for the Boston Celtics. They're probably going to lose to the Bucks. And that's why I'm not so much enjoying this Cinderella run, because I know that I betrayed my favorite team. I said they would lose to the Bucks, and here they are. They're undefeated here in the conference semis. But I do think it's plausible that the 76ers do come back and be the first team ever to overcome an 0-3 deficit.
Wow.
Because they have transcendent talent. They have Joel Embiid. They have Ben Simmons, who has been, I don't even want to say laying a couple eggs, man, because that would just, inherent in that statement would be criticism about Ben Simmons when he's a rookie and he just beat like a veteran team in the Heat, and we're already forgetting about that and being like, oh, look at the Ben Simmons line tonight. He stinks. two turnovers late in game three and a missed dunk. Like, when he should have held the ball and got fouled or something. But, you know, why, like, Ben Simmons, what he's done is awe-inspiring, and we're already forgetting about it. We're already saying, whoa, Ben Simmons and his six couldn't lead the Sixers to the East Finals. But he's still an amazing talent, and, like, he could have some big games here, because they have nothing to lose now, and they have a good mix of just, like, stupid young talented players and some veteran leadership. Then again, so do the C's. So I honestly don't know what's going to happen, man. Do the Celtics take care of business in the next game, or do the Sixers just start making their presence felt in this series, man? What does it mean if Joel Embiid starts going off?
Yeah, well, and you know, in many ways, you know, like you said, you know, this is a 0-3 hole for Philadelphia, but in many ways, this is kind of one of the most interesting series of the second round, just because there's so many variables and there's so many exciting young players and there's so many guys we haven't seen on this level yet, right? We've never seen, you know, Jason Tatum, obviously, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. We saw Jaylen Brown last year, but, you know, not at this level. He's taken a huge leap, and that's why it's so interesting, and that's why it's so hard to predict. And at the same time, like, you know, one thing I've really found, and I listen to a lot of NBA podcasts, one thing I've noticed this year more than any other is just how quickly people are to jump on one take. You know, just like before this series started, I was listening to people talking about how the Sixers are going to the finals. Now they're down 0-3. And before that, I was listening to how, you know, the Celtics are, you know, unstoppable and they can lose anyone. And it's just funny to hear these kind of these takes in real time and then see a game happen and see it all change and see a whole new position. And you really, you know, you really can't judge any of these teams until the game's over, right?
It's really enlightening as to the fact that what we say, James,
does not matter.
What the great basketball pundits like say does not matter, because we're just reacting to the phenomena of basketball, of elite, of 450 elite players going out in that hardwood on national television and trying to put an orange ball through a round hoop. And we're just reacting to the shit that happens on the court, which is totally unpredictable.
I think that's the truest thing you've said all night, Matt.
Yeah, that's the only basketball analysis you need out there, Hammers. And you know what? So what I'm saying is, look, I wouldn't be surprised if LeBron was a Raptor. I wouldn't be surprised if the Sixers stormed their way back and won this series and became the first team ever to overcome an 0-3 deficit. I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics took care of business in game 4. Like last year, Russell Westbrook became the first player to average a triple, well, sorry, since Oscar Robertson, right? He was the in so many years he was like only the second player to ever do that, and then he did a back-to-back. He did it again. He averaged a triple-double this year. So what I'm saying is, things we've never seen before, James, we're starting to see.
Okay.
You know what
With
I mean?
That being said, what would surprise you more? Seeing Utah come back from a 3-1 deficit with Houston, or seeing the New Orleans Pelicans come back from a 3-1 deficit with Golden State?
That's an easy answer, dude. I would be more surprised if the Pelicans overcame the Warriors, because the Rockets, they aren't a known entity yet, my friend. Last year, they flamed out against the San Antonio Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible that that could happen this year, because Chris Paul is prone to make very costly turnovers in pressure situations in the playoffs. That's just a known fact. He's never gotten past the second round, even though he's very cerebral, calculating, one of the greats. And the Warriors were down 3-1 in the conference finals against Kevin Durant's Thunder team, and they overcame that. So I just don't see the Warriors ever losing, man. So I would be more surprised to see the Pellies come back, which is very sad, because, I mean, I love the Pellies, dude. Do you love the Pellies?
I do. Yeah,
look,
I do.
I can't even name any Pelicans besides
the
first four.
I can name five New Orleans Pelicans, and that's including Boogie Cousins, who is out for the season.
So, look, dude, let's get into this Pelly series, because the Houston-Utah one, it's a blind spot for me, man. I don't even know what's going down in that series. They win today?
They sure did, man.
Who's they?
The Houston Rockets.
Yeah, cool. I know almost nothing about that series. But, like, the Pellies and the Warriors, dude. The Pelicans obviously surprised everybody when they swept the Blazers in the first round. It's like, woo, like for the first time, like, hey, Anthony Davis has talent around him.
Yep.
Check this out. We got Drew Holiday. He's an elite two-way up player. And Rajon Rondo, who I always have loved Rondo. And I've always said, hey, you put the ball in the hands of your mercurial point guard, and he is like Picasso, man. Like, he is an artist.
I have a question for you real quick, and you might not be able to answer this, but how old is Rajon Rondo?
I don't know. I think he's 29, 30. He's surprisingly young. Okay. He's surprisingly young. Okay. But, you know, like, the Pelicans, they have a obviously, if they keep Drew, Rondo, Anthony Davis, and Mirotić, who was an amazing trade. Fantastic. And they also shed Ashik's contract. So they have four good players, man, and they have like a good coach. But the problem is they have no depth, dude. I mean, when they beat the Warriors in Game 3, it was Ian Clark, who was, you know, who played well past the Big Four. And I'm sorry, but who is Ian Clark, man? Like,
that's Solomon a very Hill, fair point.
Solomon Hill got paid a ton of money. And they just, how do you, if you're a GM of a basketball team, how do you assemble a basketball team with no players? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what this kind of, you know, what this leads us to is the whole DeMarcus Cousins question. And, you know, that's not really a playoff question, but what do you think? Would they be better off right now if they had DeMarcus Cousins? Would they be up, you know, would the series be tied maybe? What do you think?
Well, hard to say, man. I mean, like, they really found themselves after Cousins went down.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I do love the idea of Cousins and Davis on the floor together, because no other team looks like that, you know? Especially with Rondo. Rondo has such a special connection with Cousins and Anthony Davis, like, individually. And in the regular season, Rondo had a game where he had 25 assists. He just set the playoff record for assists in a quarter. And I mean, I just love the future for this team. It's unfortunate that they're not facing the Rockets, because if they were facing the Rockets, I think it would be a different story, my friend. Unfortunately, they're facing the Warriors, who nobody has a shot against, dude. Not even Super LeBron. So, yeah. Dude, we got 6 minutes here. And we're not going to get a chance here on Hamster Wheel Sports to preview the conference finals. So why don't we do it now? It looks like in the West, it's going to be the Rockets-Warriors. What's your pick?
Well, you know, I'd love to be a contrarian to you, and it seems like you're pretty decided on the Warriors, but I can't really argue with that. And, you know, this is kind of the matchup everyone's been waiting for. Houston, Golden State. I do think, like everyone said, it might be the most interesting matchup of the postseason, including the finals. But I still got Golden State. I just think they're too deep. I think that, you know, the thing about Houston and the thing that we've really seen in, you know, all of the games up until now with the Rockets is that, you know, they have a system, and they will win and lose by that system. And the games that they've lost, they haven't deviated from that system, which is a good thing if you're a team and you're Mike D'Antoni and you want to play a certain way. And we've also seen what happens when they play by that system and they hit, and they have a 50-point quarter, and they look unstoppable. But at the same time, if you have a 7-game series, you need 4 of those games against the Warriors. Absolutely. If you don't have 4 of those games where you're hitting all those threes and everything is going right for you, that's the only way I think they do it. I think it'll go 7. I think it'll be an awesome series. I think it'll be chippy and a hell of a lot of fun, but I think the Warriors got it.
We kicked this podcast off talking about the Toronto Raptors and their psychological complex where they fear that they cannot beat LeBron. Do the Houston Rockets have that same fear, or are they world beaters? a lot of this, a lot of the success of a team will be what that team believes in the locker room. Do the Rockets believe they can beat the Warriors, or do they fear the Golden State Warriors?
Well, here's the thing. I think it's like, you know, the Raptors, whether or not they think they can beat the Cavs, there's been proof that they can't, right? The Raptors have lost 9 straight playoff games in Cleveland. So there's proof there that they can't beat the Cavs, right? The Rockets don't really have that. The Rockets have proof that they haven't succeeded, or they haven't made the finals, they haven't done this or that, but they haven't exactly, you know, been terrible against the Warriors. They've won games against the Warriors even this season. So I don't think that the Rockets necessarily, you know, think they're going to lose, or I think they probably think they have a really good shot at it, and I think they do have a really good shot at it, but I don't think it's going to be enough.
And going out, I'd agree with you, James. Going out east, and we got about 2 minutes less.
Let's go.
We're probably looking at the Cavaliers versus the Boston Celtics in a repeat of last year's conference finals. Who you got? How many games?
I mean, this is tough. This is tough just because, you know, we've undervalued and underappreciated the Celtics to this point, and we've seen them just win and win and win. And, you know, it's only been 2 rounds. They are still not out of it. They, you know, they still could lose, but it's looking pretty good. So I got the Cavs. I got the Cavs in 5, honestly. I don't know. I think the Celtics win 1 for sure. Maybe they win 2, but other than that, it feels like it, you know, and we've been saying this before, but it feels like it could be the easiest series for LeBron yet. I don't know.
It's easy to write off the guys in green when you say they're missing their 2 best players, and, you know, they're playing with house money. It's easy to write them off, right? But you look at that roster, you look at that starting lineup, and you look at their bench depth, and look, they're still a good team, man. They're still a good team. Terry Rozier's balling. They got 2 rangy, dynamic, athletic wings in Brown and Tatum. Oh my gosh, how potent. You got Big Al Horford. What a leader. You got the best coach in the NBA, and you got Marcus Morris, who's that irrational confidence guy. And you got guys on the bench who will just plug in, and you won't lose anything when your start is set. So the Celtics are a good team, even though they don't have their marquee guys. But you know what? I'm not going to break my tradition of picking against them every series, because so far, James, so far it's worked. So I'll see
keep
you.
Keep it going.
I'm
going
to pick against you, Celtics, and I'll see you in the finals, baby. And you're listening to Hamster Wheel Sports. My name is Matt Seeley.
And I'm James Ryan.
And I just got one more thing to remind you of, and that is sports.
Go Knicks.